south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, a couple of emails first, and then we'll see how many woke listeners we can root out and make fun of. Yeah, you know, I've got all kinds of listeners from all over the world, lots of woke people, whose main mission, it seems to me, is trying to get people, like me, canceled. I say, go for it, you retards. Question is, why do you keep listening and sending me emails? What's the matter? Aren't CNN, AOC, Mad Maxine Waters, The New York Times, Bill Gates, Dr. Fauci, Ellen DeGeneres, and Oprah making you and your lemming buddies happy anymore? But I digress, and in the first 30 seconds of the show, how about that? Now, to set this first email up, you longtime listeners have heard me say many times before, since some of the roads here in Latin America are so badly maintained, if you're thinking about getting a car, you should really consider getting a 4x4 pickup or a mini SUV. It's not that you'll ever put the thing into four-wheel drive. I've had many four-wheel drive vehicles down here, and I've never had to switch in all axles. It's just that pickup trucks and SUVs, mini or full-sized, always have heavier-duty suspensions and a lot more ground clearance than the average car. You know, distance from the road to the frame under the door. To me, the number one thing you should be looking at in a vehicle is ground clearance. The more, the better. That should be the number one thing for guys anyway, because ladies, hey, they just want a nice looking car. Nothing wrong with that. You know, different strokes for different folks and all that. Is that sexist? Well, then cancel me, why don't you? All right, then who's left listening? Let's move on. In fact, I've actually taken some measurements and have looked into what's available in the way of high ground clearance vehicles. If you look it up, you'll find some of the standard pickups and SUVs have road clearances of 7, 8, or even 9 inches. Again, when driving down here, the higher the better. Basically for three reasons. Number one, those things called tumulos, known up by you as speed bumps. I'll tell you, those things have trashed out more undercarriages of regular cars than even the deepest of potholes. And believe me, some potholes are monstrous. The thing is, though, even a standard car could take a pothole at low speeds. But those tumulos or speed bumps, some of them are raised so high in the air that you will scrape no matter how slow you take them. And though you may be very cautious and slow down appropriately, the thing people forget is that when you've got passengers in a car and a couple of extra 100 pounds, your car ride's a little bit lower. That includes hauling or stocking up on stuff in the hardware or grocery store, too. Don't forget your car will ride a bit lower, meaning the same tumulos you may have cleared just fine on the way to the hardware store, on the way back home, you just might bottom out on them. Now, if you're down here long enough, especially if you drive down here, there'll be one odd thing you'll start noticing about most cars that are not late model or brand new. The front and or back bumper, which in today's cars are all plastic, you know. Well, down here, they've been knocked and jarred and banged around so much by those tumulos. I'm talking about the plastic underside of those bumpers, where they're connected to the frame. Well, the thing you'll notice right away, if you're looking at the lines and seams of the bumper where they match up with the other car parts, like the fenders and rocker panels, you'll notice they never quite meet or match like they used to when the car was new. In fact, I'd say most regular cars that have been on the road here in Latin America for 3 years or more, they've scraped bottom on tumulos so many times that some of the underside fasteners, which are also plastic, have popped out or have been torn out. And when you try to replace them or fix them, it ain't easy. New fasteners just won't fit in those slots and holes anymore. That's why so many car owners whose bumpers are virtually falling apart will shimmy down under the car and try to refasten and stabilize the bumper somehow using those ubiquitous nylon tie wraps. You know what I'm talking about. And obviously, after a few more tumulo hits, those things eventually get torn loose too. That's why I always say, if you're looking to buy a used car here in Latin America, always stick your head down under the bumper and look how much damage has been done by tumulos. See how many of those clips that fasten the bumpers are missing, broken, duct taped, or rigged up with multiple nylon tie wraps. Well, and here's another quick tip. If you can't get your head under the bumper to take a look at that stuff, either your head's way too big or the car's way too low. Don't buy it. Then again, you could disregard that advice if you wear a size 6 hat or less. or if you're a pinhead government bureaucrat. By the way, I'd venture to guess that perhaps 98 or 99% of adult U.S. males don't even know their own hat size. Though women might, because they do come in and out of fashion periodically, in a soft kind of way. But for men, the last male hat fashion craze petered out with the Rat Pack around 1960. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, I mentioned three main reasons why you don't want to have a regular car. Because they sit so low. Number one, the tumalo, the speed bump. Number two, the occasional gigantic pothole. Number three, and you rarely see this up in the States, missing manhole covers. You know, the typical manhole cover is cast iron and weighs between 100 to 200 pounds. Now, here's something that almost no one knows or gives a damn about. But the reason why there's a market for stolen manhole covers here in Latin America is you get about $30 in scrap for each one. Now, get this. A replacement cast iron manhole cover is around $200. So naturally, companies have come out with fiberglass and very dense plastic manhole covers that'll take all the weight of a cast iron one, up to 40 tons. And those composite fiberglass plastic manhole covers have zero resale or scrap value. So why don't you see them everywhere then? Well, because they cost about $600 each and standard cast iron manhole cover, $200. But you know, I am starting to see some of the fiberglass ones in and around Latin America, so I guess that's some progress. Oh, and I just remembered a fourth reason why you want a car, SUV, or pickup with high road clearance. It's because during the rainy seasons, there are always flash floods, though an intersection might only be flooded for 20 minutes to an hour. If you're driving through in a standard car with normal road clearance, you could get a wet foot. Worse yet, since water offers tremendous resistance when you drive through it, remember those plastic fasteners beneath the car frame holding down the bumpers? Well, as you plow through an intersection's temporary lake, the water will get up and under that panel and cause a hell of a lot of strain on those fasteners. Same effect when you're driving fast on the open highway in a car whose bumpers have been repaired or refastened because of damage. Like the force of the air on a wing of an airplane, the 60 or 80 mile an hour air will get up and under and tend to separate any openings in those loose plastic panels. That's why when you're taking a trip through the boonies in Latin America, you'll often see on the open road where people don't much care about the speed limit, an abandoned chunk of car plastic alongside the road. In fact, I've been a passenger in many cars, taxis, Ubers, etc., out on the open road where at a certain speed you start hearing some odd noises and vibrations. Most of the time it's not a mechanical problem. It's the air getting up and under those bumper panels that have been jarred slightly loose by tumalos. At high speeds, that stuff vibrates, separates, and makes a racket, eventually loosening up and causing damage too. Which brings us to this short email from Mr. Gringo Star. He says, "Dear Johnny, as an alternative to buying an SUV or van or pickup truck with a raised suspension, would it pay perhaps to have a mechanic raise the suspension on a standard sedan auto like a Toyota Celica?" He says, "My girlfriend has just such a car. If a sedan car was raised to counter the physical hazards of driving on Latin American streets, would it be worth the money to do so? Or perhaps would the car be too unstable to drive? Many thanks. Signed, Gringo Star, Antigua, Guatemala." All right, Mr. Starkey. You know, that was Ringo's real name, Richard Starkey. You know, the longer you live here in Latin America, the more you become accustomed to seeing cars and trucks modified, extended, raised, lowered. There are just all kinds of welders and mechanics that'll do anything you want them to do with your vehicle. If you want a complete metal enclosure welded to the back of your station wagon or pickup truck so that your driveway chickens, goats, your fighting cock roosters, pigs, yep, even pigs, will be well caged when you're driving them to market, well, down here, there's no laws against modifying your car. And if there were, there's no enforcement. And I imagine, Mr. Starr, a modification like that to raise your suspension on a Toyota would be fairly cheap, maybe a couple $100. Though to make it worthwhile, you'd have to raise it at least 2 or 3 inches. That means some steel and extra welding. As far as stability, well, if you're not into high-speed highway driving or taking hard, fast curves, I can't see stability being a problem. Except, car suspensions are not nearly as heavy-duty or well-reinforced as a truck. In fact, most SUVs are souped-up car bodies put on truck suspensions, where the frames, axles, tie rods, even the brakes are more heavier duty than a regular car. Besides that, once you've modified and jacked up a car like that, it'll have almost no resale value. So if you do that, plan on owning it and running it till it dies. And Toyotas are pretty hard to kill. You see lots of 30, even 40-year-old ones on the road here. It still amazes me how long cars can last here in Latin America. They've got everything going against them, with the sun and the rainy season, lack of maintenance, and even the lack of, in most instances, regular oil changes. All right, now an email from a lady Expat Insider Seminar attendee, one of our favorite people, Chris. She says, Johnny, thanks for sending us the COVIDiot links. She's, of course, referring to the links that I have for YouTubes that are certain to be banned soon because they tell the truth about Dr. Fauci, Bill Gates, and all the dough the pharmaceutical companies are making, because that's what it's all about. It's about the dough and panicking all the sheep into believing only Big Pharma and the government know what's good for you. Yeah, right, as if the government has ever been truly successful at anything. Oh, and before I get into Chris's email, I have to tell you about an email I got from a listener, Danny, who says, finally, the U.S. government has achieved their mission. They won a war. They've won the war on stupidity. Wasn't easy, he said. It took about 20 or 30 years of dumbing down the curriculums in the public schools and public universities. It's a war they've won. About time, too, because when it comes to wars, the government's been a loser for the past 50 years, the past three generations. It's pretty embarrassing to look back and note they lost the war on poverty, the war on drugs, the war on cancer, the Gulf Wars, the Afghan Wars, the Vietnam War, all the way back to the Korean War. Oh, and just recently, as you all can see, they've lost the war on inflation. But finally, yes, finally, they've proved their mettle. They won the war on stupidity. Victory can now be claimed. 99% of the population have been completely dumbed down. Good to see for once your tax dollars have produced the desired effect. That reminds me, recently another listener scolded me, saying, you keep talking about how the mainstream media keeps dishing out fake news. Well, I beg to differ. It's not all fake news, said Carol, a longtime listener. She said, the mainstream media occasionally get the temperature, the time, the hockey scores, and the weather forecast completely correct. So please, Johnny, quit generalizing. Carol, you got me there. Guilty as charged. And Carol, I know you're from Canada. Who else would mention hockey scores? By the way, I've got a very big list now of people who want to come to my next Expat Insider Seminar, which I hope to launch before the end of the year. And of course, you know the reasons I've been postponing it. The ever-changing COVIDiot rules. One of the main problems and wild cards being that at almost every seminar I've ever had, I've had a Canadian or two or three. And as you probably know, the COVIDiot restrictions in Canada are some of the worst in the world. Turns out, even if you're a citizen returning to Canada, you got to go into quarantine for 10 days at your own expense. And believe me, that really puts a damper on people wanting to go back and forth, like, for example, to a seminar. So the seminar will be launching when those lunatic requirements ease up. Now, I've heard that Canada is going to be lifting those restrictions soon. Of course, we'll be monitoring that. The other problem is that some countries, including a lot of European countries, are refusing the entrance of people from certain other countries that have had a high COVID count. Yet more proof that governments have won the war on stupidity. So yes, there will be a seminar. We're just waiting for some of the more crazy-ass restrictions to loosen up. Which brings us to this email from Expat Insider alumnus Chris. She says, thanks for the real COVIDiot links. Also, I appreciate the letter you read on the podcast recently from another repeat seminar offender. I'm going to guess, Johnny, it was Jen, as in Jen and Steve, who got married at the seminar. All right, me, Johnny, here. Yeah, that's something I failed to mention on the show. Talk about expecting the unexpected. Imagine that at one of the previous seminars, our seminar lawyer married two of the attendees. How's that for a boots on the ground story? But Chris, you're mistaken. That letter I read on the podcast recently about making sure when you build or rent a place that it's correctly and ergonomically designed. Especially important for people slipping into old age, and you know what that means, and people with mobility problems. Just to set the record straight, the Jen who wrote that on our last show was another Jen. Anyway, Chris says, Johnny, I appreciate you talking about planning for our decrepit years in regards to construction and house layout. I know many people, she says, who have parents who live on the second floor of a house with very treacherous stairs and other hazards of old age. Then she mentions how airlines have been gouging people during the COVIDiot thing. She says, last June, a year ago, when I was in Guatemala and decided to return to the U.S., smack in the middle of the most panicky stages of the pandemic. Well, Johnny, at that time, the so-called, quote, repatriation flights from Guatemala to the United States were running $1,800 one way. Then, when the lockdown came in March 2020, there were lots of gringos in Antigua who were on vacation and were stranded, though stranded is a strong word, because it really was quite tranquil in Antigua, Guatemala. But it was obvious the airlines were price gouging. One-way economy class, $1,800. So anyway, even though the airport was closed to incoming flights for non-resident travelers, I decided to book a round trip with a return date as far out as I could get one, which was 5 months. The first class round trip was $850. My, how things change. So I booked it. The return flight, however, was scheduled for last October, and it was canceled by the airline. But the ticket is good until May 2022. A small win, but a win, nevertheless. Well, thanks for that, Chris. And I gotta tell you, price gouging was everywhere during the panic months of last summer. But now, prices have not only moved to pre-pandemic levels. I can't believe, today I just looked it up, for a round-trip flight from O'Hare Field in Chicago to Guatemala City in October, $350. Now, I know pre-pandemic, you could find flights for about $450 to $550, but $350 is the lowest I've ever seen it. A far cry from a year ago last June, as Chris said, when the rates were $1,800 one way. And for that disruption from normal, we can thank Dr. Dickhead Fulci. He's the one, you know, who funded the gain of research at Wuhan Lab that produced the COVIDiot strains, and he's gonna go down for it, you watch. What a pompous, two-faced, lying sack of shit. And of course, as usual, I mean that in the kindest, most Christian sort of way. Though I think both Bill Gates and Dr. Fulci would look good in matching orange jumpsuits, don't you think? Then comes this email from Emily. She says, "Hey John, nice to meet you. I'm a new listener to the Expat Files podcast, longtime Spanish speaker too, and lover of all things Central American. I really enjoy your podcast, your delivery information, of course, political views. Ask me about January 6th, why don't you? Anyway, I'm here for your help, another gringo family headed south of the border. Just can't take the BS anymore. Now, John, you mentioned boots on the ground a lot in your podcast, being off the gringo tourist trail too. Well, I'm here with a typical gringo response for you. We are looking to head to Costa Rica, and here's why. I've been to Costa Rica the most out of any country that I've visited in Central America, and I have connections there already. We're looking around the Lake Arenal areas, more specifically in the village of El Castillo, as I have some work opportunities there. I think this area is a little less gringoized and whitewashed than some of the other areas of Costa Rica, although I can't be sure because I haven't been back since 2015, 7 years ago. Anyway, John, I'm hoping you can help us with a 2-year plan, or less. It will be my husband and 2 children, ages 3 and 4. We're all making the faithful leap. I'm just trying to gather as much info as I can before we start making the move, as this will be the most planning I've ever had to do in my life. Looking forward to hearing from you. Kind regards. Signed, Emily." Well, thanks for that, Emily. And, you know, I've got over 1,000 podcasts out there, and many, many of them I talk about Costa Rica. I've been there dozens of times. I lived there almost 3 years myself. And in that time, I watched every single one of my gringo buddies and expat acquaintances get ripped off over and over again. Now, I'm not talking about petty crime, like a motorcycle pulling up, cutting your purse off, or stealing your wallet. A lot of that goes on, too, in every big city in Latin America, basically. Smaller towns, not much at all. But I'm talking about the organized, astute gringo ripoffs involving land, rent, businesses, permits, licenses, everything. Problem is, Emily, Costa Rica was the very first destination that was cool for gringos and expats to go to. That all started some 30-plus years ago now. In fact, when I first went down there, back in 1985, just to get my bearings, get some boots on the ground, etc., the locals weren't quite jaded yet. There weren't that many gringos at all, though they were coming in by the boatload. The simple reason was that Costa Rica touted itself as the only country in Latin America that did not have a standing army. Though if you actually have been down there for a while or lived there like I did, you realize if you added up all the law enforcement personnel, local police, federal police, National Guard, sheriffs, deputies, the works, they've got just as many people in uniform or more per capita than most other Latin countries who actually have a standing army. Great PR, but not quite what people think. Unfortunately, in 30 or 40 years, Costa Ricans have learned all about gouging gringos. At all levels, too. The local population, including lawyers, cops, realtors, land dealers, and government slugs, have become masters at fleecing especially starry-eyed newly arrived gringos. In fact, if you go back into my archives, they stretch back 12 years now. I relate all kinds of wild and crazy gringo ripoff stories. In fact, I personally know a gringo who got ripped off for $800,000 by his lawyer. I knew a gringo Canadian who had the hottest, most successful bar, restaurant, and live entertainment place, too. He bought a hole in a wall in a great location, built up that business from scratch, only to find after it was a huge success that his girlfriend, a Costa Rican, had worked a deal with a lawyer to fleece him out of his title. Then there was a couple of Canadian buddies of mine who bought into a beautiful, already built, beachfront community with cabanas and condos, swimming pools, restaurants, the works, only to find out after they'd moved in for a year or so that the land was registered in someone else's name. Oh, the houses and condos were in the owner's names, of course, but the actual land was titled in someone else's name. In other words, they could never sell that property or pass it on to their heirs without clearing the title. And to clear the title, they all had to fork up by, I think it was $12,000 apiece. And only then did he give them free and clear title to that land. It was a big surprise to something like 35 mostly Canadian property owners in the same project. You see, that's who Costa Rican scammers target. Mostly snowbirds that come down just for a month or two a year or even more, but most generally people who aren't in the country full time. And when they leave for a month or two or six, whatever, when the cat's away, that's when the dirty dealings start. Oh, and in my own case, I was extorted twice by Costa Rican neighbors. They were property line disputes on land I owned. One wanted $5,000. He said my fence was on his property by 10 feet. Which wasn't true, so I sicked a lawyer on him and he had to go away. But the thing is, you see, the average gringo does not speak Spanish. And when his lawyer informs him he's being sued by someone like that, sometimes the lawyer's in on it and he'll tell you it's better to just pay him off than to go to court, which could take years. And during that time you go to court, with all the delays and postponements, you can never sell or do further developments to the land while a dispute about the property is being dragged through court. Though I won that one without going to court because it was so blatantly obvious he was in the wrong and it was just a nuisance suit. Then another group came after me, the Neighborhood Zoning Board. I can't remember now how many there were on that board, but they each wanted a $1,000 bribe. If not, they said they were going to slap me with a zoning ordinance violation that never existed for anyone else except me. Yeah, right. Welcome to the neighborhood, gringo. Looking back, I think I did pay them something. I think it was $1,000 total. Funny thing, though, Latino culture is different from ours in that the guys who bribe and extort you like that, once you pay them off, they want to be your best friend. They invite you to birthdays, backyard barbecues, and quinceaños events. Can you believe it? As if nothing ever happened, like you were all of a sudden best friends. Oh, and you regular listeners know that also happens with cops. When they stop you, telling you there's something wrong with your papers, how are you going to fight that? And even if you did, how could you decipher all that legalese? Well, after you fork up 20, 30, or 50 bucks, whatever, suddenly cops will even whip out their wallets showing you pictures of their wife and kids. Very strange and hard to get used to. In fact, I'll never forget the time I was pulled over by a motorcycle cop in Costa Rica. Back then, I didn't speak much Spanish at all, so I couldn't talk my way out of it. Paid a $20 bribe, I think. Now, get this. Before we parted, he wanted a hug. Well, you know, I'm not such a touchy-feely guy, but I obliged. What the hell? When in Rome, you know? And then there's the fact that when I was searching for a lawyer in Costa Rica, I selected a guy who had a law practice and was a law professor at the university and a poet who had published a few books of poetry. I figured those were great qualifications as to what kind of person he was. He was honest. That's why, day one, he sat me down and said, you know, you're going to need another lawyer, too. He said, I don't pay bribes or get involved with dirty dealings, but I have a lawyer friend who will. So he said, when it comes to bribes and backhanded stuff, we'll use him. Now imagine if it was you sitting there and that was your first introduction to the Costa Rican legal system. Hey, I could ramble on for 5 hours talking about Costa Rican gringo expat ripoff stories. And none of them hearsay either. All stories that have happened to gringo expat buddies and acquaintances of mine. And that's one of the main reasons why I prefer to live way off the gringo tourist trail. And Emily, you talk about living near Lake Arenal. I know it well. You say how it might be less gringo whitewashed than the rest of the country. Well, sorry, Emily. There are no places in Costa Rica that are off the gringo tourist trail. The whole country is the gringo tourist trail. Though you say you do speak Spanish. Well, then you have a huge advantage if you decide to live off the gringo tourist trail anywhere in Latin America. Because that's generally the number one reason why people want to go to gringo tourist areas. Because they can't speak Spanish and they want to be around their kind and all that. But you've gotten over that hump. You've got no Spanish learning curve, so you could adapt really well off the tourist trail. And it'll be half as expensive, too. Because, you know, when you're on the tourist trail, especially in Costa Rica, it costs just as much as living in New York or Chicago. In some places, even more. Though, of course, Emily, if money's no object, you can live anywhere and surround yourself with all the creature comforts you desire. So, Emily, I hope I haven't put you off, but hey, I've got to tell it like it is, as opposed to rags like International Living, who've got overpriced real estate to sell. But you knew that already, right? All right, now let's talk a little bit about gringa ladies hooking up with the Latin guy of their dreams. Here's a portentous boots on the ground story for you. A 30-something gringa lady friend of mine came down to Latin America, met the man of her dreams in Panama City, Panama. Her and I talk on Signal once in a while and shoot emails back and forth. Well, she just reported in a couple days ago and said her world had collapsed on her. She'd been living with this handsome Latin lover guy. Nice guy, I knew him too. Kind of born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His dad owns a couple of car dealerships in Panama. And so when his three sons came of age, he gave each one of them a piece of the car business. This guy in particular is in the spare body parts business. He told me, get this, he pays off four guys on an annual basis who are insurance adjusters for four different insurance companies. In other words, he bribes them. He gives these four guys $1,000 a year, he says. And when one of their clients gets in an accident, they call the insurance adjuster. He goes out, inspects the damage, comes up with a repair bill. He calls up the guy who bribed them, who pays him $1,000 a year, and says, okay, I need this part, and this part. You get it? Hey, what can I say? This is Latin America. Anyway, my gringa friend had been living with this guy for 2 years or more. And just a couple of days ago, he was out of town attending his uncle's funeral. Somehow, in the meantime, he forgot his phone at home. She knew his password, too. She'd seen him do it 100 times. It was 1, 2, 3, 4. She was tempted to snoop because she knew all the stories about Latin guy infidelities. Though she said she didn't have any real cause for suspicion, except for the fact he had a toxic streak of jealousy. Whenever she was out on her own and came back, he gave her the third degree. She had to account for every minute she was gone, account for everyone she met. He was even jealous that I was her friend. And once, she confessed, he smacked her in the face when she came back from the gym, all because she sent him a hello lunchtime video of her working out at the gym, and there happened to be a handsome guy on the machine right next to her. And apparently, the guy on the neighboring machine looked over a couple times at her while she was talking to her boyfriend on the phone. And when she got home, her Latino boyfriend read her the riot act and smacked her for it. So for that reason, his toxic jealousy, she had some suspicions and had her chance to check his WhatsApp. Well, when she called me, she wasn't crying. She was furious. Her handsome Latino boyfriend, the guy she'd been living with for over 2 years, he wasn't having just one or two affairs. He was juggling 7 different women. Hey, I know that sounds crazy, and you wonder, how could he do it and get away with it? Well, he got caught. I'll keep you posted. There's more to come on that. Because as of right now, when I'm doing this show, she has not confronted him yet. She's only told a couple of her best girlfriends and me. Now, and I told you so would definitely be rubbing salt in the wound. But love is blind. Though I can't believe she didn't see the warning signs way up front. When she met the guy, she knew. He had 2 young kids from 2 different women, and he was never married to either of them. Come on, ladies, and especially you gringa expats. Is that not a solid red flag?
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.